Chapter 24. Eustacia bounded into the vehicle and sat on the stool, ensconced from view on the side towards the trackway. Soon she heard the brushing of other feet and the Rattleman's, a not very friendly oot day uttered by two men in passing each other, and then the dwindling of the footfall of one of them in a direction onwards. Eustacia stretched her neck forward till she caught a glimpse of a receding back and shoulders, and she felt a wretched twinge of misery, she knew not why. It was the sickening feeling which, if the changed heart has any generosity at all in its composition, accompanies the sudden sight of a once loved one who is beloved no more. When Eustacia descended to proceed on her way, the Rattleman came near. "That was Mr. Wildev who passed, miss," he said slowly, and expressed by his face that he expected her to feel vexed at having been sitting unseen. "Yes, I saw him coming up the hill," replied Eustacia. "Why should you tell me that?" It was a bold question, considering the Rattleman's knowledge of her past love, but her undemonstrative manner had power to repress the opinions of those she treated as remote from her. "I am glad to hear that you can ask it," said the Rattleman bluntly. "Indeed, now I think of it, it agrees with what I saw last night." "Ah, what was that?" Eustacia wished to leave him, but wished to know. "Mr. Wildev stayed at Rainbarrow a long time waiting for a lady who didn't come." "You waited too, it seems?"
"Yes, I always do. I was glad to see him disappointed. He will be there again tonight."
"To be again disappointed? The truth is, Rattleman, that lady, so far from wishing to stand in the way of Thomason's marriage with Mr. Wildev, would be very glad to promote it." Ben felt much astonishment at this avowal, though he did not show it clearly. That exhibition may greet remarks which are one remove from expectation, but it is usually withheld in complicated cases of two removes and upwards.
"Indeed, miss," he replied.
"How do you know that Mr. Wildev will come to Rainbarrow again tonight?" she asked.
"I heard him say to himself that he would. He's in a regular temper."
Eustacia looked for a moment what she felt, and she murmured, lifting her deep dark eyes anxiously to his, "I wish I knew what to do. I don't want to be uncivil to him, but I don't wish to see him again, and I have some few little things to return to him. If you choose to send them by me, miss, and a note to tell him that you wish to say no more to him, I'll take it for you quite privately. That would be the most straightforward way of letting him know your mind."
"Very well," said Eustacia. "Home towards my house, and I will bring it out to you."
She went on, and as the path was an infinitely small parting in the shaggy locks of the heath, the Rattleman followed exactly in her trail. She saw from a distance that the captain was on the bank sweeping the horizon with his telescope, and bidding Ven to wait where he stood, she entered the house alone. In 10 minutes she returned with a parcel and a note, and said, in placing them in his hand, "Why are you so ready to take these for me?
Can you ask that?
I suppose you think to serve Thomason in some way by it. Are you as anxious as ever to help on her marriage?" Ven was a little moved.
"Would sooner have married her myself," he said in a low voice. "But what I feel is that if she cannot be happy without him, I will do my duty in helping her to get him, as a man ought."
Eustacia looked curiously at the singular man who spoke thus. What a strange sort of love, to be entirely free from that quality of selfishness which is frequently the chief constituent of the passion, and sometimes its only one. The Rattleman's disinterestedness was so well deserving of respect that it overshot respect by being barely comprehended, and she almost thought it absurd.
"Then we are both of one mind at last," she said.
"Yes," replied Van gloomily. "But if you would tell me, miss, why you take such an interest in her, I should be easier. It is so sudden and strange."
Eustacia appeared at a loss.
"Cannot tell you that, Rattleman," she said coldly.
Ven said no more. He pocketed the letter, and, bowing to Eustacia, went away.
Rainbarrow had again become blended with night when Wildev ascended the long acclivity at its base.
On his reaching the top, a shape grew up from the earth immediately behind him. It was that of Eustacia's emissary. He slapped Wildev on the shoulder. The feverish young innkeeper and ex-engineer started like Satan at the touch of Ithuriel's spear. The meeting is always at 8 o'clock, at this place, said Ven, and here we are we three.
We three? Said Wildev, looking quickly round.
Yes, you, and I, and she. This is she. He held up the letter and parcel.
Wildev took them wonderingly.
Don't quite see what this means, he said. How do you come here? There must be some mistake.
It will be cleared from your mind when you have read the letter.
Lanterns for one. The Red Omen struck a light, kindled an inch of tallow candle which he had brought, and sheltered it with his cap.
Who are you? Said Wildev, discerning by the candlelight an obscure rubicundity of person in his companion.
You are the Red Omen I saw on the hill this morning. Why, you are the man who, please read the letter.
If you had come from the other one I shouldn't have been surprised, murmured Wildev as he opened the letter and read.
His face grew serious.
To Mr. Wildev. After some thought I have decided once and for all that we must hold no further communication. The more I consider the matter, the more I am convinced that there must be an end to our acquaintance.
Had you been uniformly faithful to me throughout these 2 years, you might now have some ground for accusing me of heartlessness. But if you calmly consider what I bore during the period of your desertion, and how I passively put up with your courtship of another without once interfering, you will, I think, own that I have a right to consult my own feelings when you come back to me again. That these are not what they were towards you may, perhaps, be a fault in me, but it is one which you can scarcely reproach me for when you remember how you left me for Thomason.
The little articles you gave me in the early part of our friendship are returned by the bearer of this letter. They should rightly have been sent back when I first heard of your engagement to her.
Eustacia.
By the time that Wildev reached her name, the blankness with which he had read the first half of the letter intensified to mortification.
I'm made a great fool of, one way and another, he said pettishly.
Oh, you know what is in this letter?
The Red Omen hummed a tune.
Can't you answer me? Asked Wildev warmly.
Ru-um tum tum, sang the Red Omen.
Wildev stood looking on the ground beside Ven's feet, till he allowed his eyes to travel upwards over Diggory's form, as illuminated by the candle, to his head and face.
Ha ha! Well, I suppose I deserve it, considering how I have played with them both, he said at last, as much to himself as to Ven.
Out of all the odd things that ever I knew, the oddest is that you should so run counter to your own interests as to bring this to me.
My interests?
Certainly. 'Twas your interest not to do anything which would send me courting Thomason again. Now she has accepted you or something like it.
Mrs. Eobright says you are to marry her.
'Tisn't true, then?
Good Lord.
I heard of this before, but didn't believe it.
When did she say so?
Wildev began humming as the Red Omen had done.
I don't believe it now, cried Ven.
Ru-um tum tum, sang Wildev.
Oh Lord, how we can imitate,
said Ven contemptuously.
I'll have this out. I'll go straight to her.
Diggory withdrew with an emphatic step, Wildev's eye passing over his form in withering derision, as if he were no more than a heath cropper.
When the Red Omen's figure could no longer be seen, Wildev himself descended and plunged into the rayless hollow of the veil.
To lose the two women he who had been the well-beloved of both was too ironical an issue to be endured.
He could only decently save himself by Thomason, and once he became her husband, Eustacia's repentance, he thought, would set in for a long and bitter term.
It was no wonder that Wildev, ignorant of the new man at the back of the scene, should have supposed Eustacia to be playing a part. To believe that the letter was not the result of some momentary pique, to infer that she really gave him up to Thomason, would have required previous knowledge of her transfiguration by that man's influence.
Who was to know that as he had grown generous in the greediness of a new passion, that in coveting one cousin she was dealing liberally with another, that in her eagerness to appropriate she gave way. Full of this resolve to marry in haste, and wring the heart of the proud girl, Wildev went his way. Meanwhile Diggory Venn had returned to his van, where he stood looking thoughtfully into the stove. A new vista was opened up to him. But, however promising Mrs. Eobright's views of him might be as a candidate for her niece's hand, one condition was indispensable to the favor of Thomason herself, and that was a renunciation of his present wild mode of life. In this he saw little difficulty. He could not afford to wait till the next day before seeing Thomason and detailing his plan. He speedily plunged himself into toilet operations, pulled a suit of cloth clothes from a box, and in about 20 minutes stood before the van lantern as a gentleman in nothing but his face, the vermilion shades of which were not to be removed in a day. Closing the door and fastening it with a padlock, Venn set off towards Bloom's End. He had reached the white palings, and laid his hand upon the gate, when the door of the house opened, and quickly closed again. A female form had glided in. At the same time a man, who had seemingly been standing with the woman in the porch, came forward from the house till he was face to face with Venn. It was Wildev again. "Man alive, you've been quick at it," said Diggory sarcastically. "And you slow, as you will find," said Wildev. And, lowering his voice, "you may as well go back again now. I've claimed her, and got her. Good night, gentlemen." Thereupon Wildev walked away. Venn's heart sank within him, though it had not risen unduly high. He stood leaning over the palings, in an indecisive mood for nearly a quarter of an hour. Then he went up the garden path, knocked, and asked for Mrs. Eobright. Instead of requesting him to enter, she came to the porch. A discourse was carried on between them in low measured tones for the space of 10 minutes or more. At the end of the time Mrs. Eobright went in, and Venn sadly retraced his steps into the heath. When he had again regained his van he lit the lantern, and with an apathetic face at once began to pull off his best clothes, till in the course of a few minutes he reappeared as the confirmed and irretrievable gentleman that he had seemed before. 8 Firmness is discovered in a gentle heart. On that evening the interior of Bloom's End, though cozy and comfortable, had been rather silent. Clem Eobright was not at home. Since the Christmas party he had gone on a few days' visit to a friend about 10 miles off. The shadowy form seen by Venn, to part from Wildev in the porch, and quickly withdraw into the house, was Thomason's. On entering she threw down a cloak which Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.